And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly, our first broadcast from our third studio in 33 years.
The third one?
This is our third studio.
Yes, it is. And you know what? We've been at all three.
We have been at all three because we've been here since the beginning. Our new studio is up on Central Expressway. We have windows all around the studio.
I'm loving the view.
Yeah.
I love it.
And all the people who are out on the plaza. I asked if we could take a microphone out. They said, sure. Go talk to all those people. There's a parking lot around us. Anyway, our guest today was supposed to be Kevin Jennings, which I think we might have announced last week. He will be with us in 3 weeks. Our phone lines aren't working exactly right yet here in the new studio. There's kind of still a lot of stuff all over the place here. But we're settling in. It looks a whole lot better than it did just a couple of days ago when I was up here. So, but this studio is gorgeous.
It really is.
It's just so nice. We're used to our technology. This board was built in this century. It's the first time we've had that.
And listeners, he's not joking.
Because our original board, but the board before that was built in the 1890s. It wasn't even in that. It was real old. So anyway, Bart Poche stepped in at the last minute. Bart, thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely.
Bart is a postbaccalaureate researcher at the University of North Texas. He does research specifically on LGBT people and aging. So mostly this is about you, Laron, because you have the most aging to do here. Bart, first of all, thank you again. And how did you get into studying this issue?
I've been a part of the Center for Psychosocial Health Research at UNT, which is our LGBT-focused research team there.
And you thought of us when you came here focusing on the psycho.
Right. Most of what we do is psychosocial issues in LGBT communities. We do a lot of research on quality of living and health metrics for people living with HIV. And this project we just started last fall, that's an investigation into issues within the aging LGBT community. And it's things that span from healthcare disparities to social support issues to things that just contribute to general happiness, well-being, and quality of life in aging LGBT people.
Why study the issue, and what's different about gay people aging and straight people aging other than we expect to do it much more fabulously?
Right.
And we won't settle for anything less.
Right. The first is that there isn't much out there. The literature is very scarce when it comes to aging LGBT community. There is a lot of gerontology research. There's a lot of LGBT research, but there's not much at that intersection. And so the fact that it's a very understudied population means that there is a lot that we don't know that's unique to aging as an LGBT person. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same challenges and success factors that you have in the straight community plus a lot of others. And so when it comes to things like what happens when LGBT seniors move into a senior living facility, or what happens when they encounter a major health crisis or financial crisis, and how is that different from what you might imagine to be a heterosexual couple that has, you know, three kids that they're, you know, in touch with, they have a spouse that can help take care of them and support mm-hmm. them, and they have this safety net versus what sometimes happens in the LGBT community. We may or may not have relationships with our children if we have them, or our spouse if we had one. And so that structure is very different. A lot of times that wonderful phenomenon of chosen families that happens in the LGBT community, if for whatever reason you don't have your natural family.
A couple of things occur to me that actually got settled with the Obergefell decision, with the marriage equality decision. Okay, Laron is married.
Yes.
And has been for 7 or 8 years now. And before, he still would have had to have, for Danny to commit him, which we don't understand why he hasn't yet. It's going to happen soon. That's taken care of now. Danny has the right to put Laron in the Alzheimer's facility that he should have been in for the last 5 years. Somebody who doesn't have a partner, though, all kinds of paperwork just for a partner to take care of you or a friend to take care of you. Mm-hmm. But first, let's do the easy part. What are some of the things that probably got settled? That's one of them. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that marriage equality helped?
There are, of course, amazing advances that have been made. And so a lot of the legal questions have been settled. A person's legal spouse can make decisions for them, and the requirements are not quite as stringent as someone that's maybe outside of your nuclear family that would need medical power of attorney. You would need, you know, a living will and, you know, those sorts of things.
Inheritance is one of those other things.
Sure it is. Sure it is. Could a will be challenged perhaps by a child that maybe has been gone for 30 years that all of a sudden comes around when it's time for will reading?
Absolutely.
You know,
oh,
kind of thing.
My father's will, my father's wife's will was challenged.
It was.
Yeah. In a straight relationship. So, you know, those things can happen to anybody.
Yeah. My grandmother's will was challenged.
Really?
Big mess. Oh, yeah. That can always happen.
Yeah. A lot of those things have been settled. And the same can be said of things like when it comes to financial subsistence later in life, access to the 401k, to the, you know, medical insurance, the pension plan, all that kind of stuff. A lot of that is also settled.
Social
legally.
Security is not settled yet, but they're getting there.
Going to be. Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of those things are settled. But I think if you have watched TV in the last 10 hours, probably, you know that the debate's not settled on this at all.
No.
And so the things that still contribute to a lot of factors related to a person's happiness and well-being later in life, there's still a lot of stigma. There's still a lot of vitriol. There's still everything happening in the Republican Party right now with the in the primary. And these things do have real effects on people's happiness, on their health, on their mental health later in life. And they do have an impact on a person's social structure. Their ability to go out and find resources to be a part of a gay community later in life is very different than if it's something mm-hmm. you just grew up with. And those sorts of things, a law change is a very important step, but it doesn't change lots of work that we still have to do as a society mm-hmm. to be welcoming and supportive of our LGBT seniors.
Well, I think socially it still hasn't changed much just right. because the legal has. Let's just look at what's going on in Kentucky with this Kim Davis woman. Yeah. Let's just say, God forbid, but if an elderly couple were to go to a nursing home to put one of the spouses in there, you could have the head person in there say, well, I don't have to do this legally. Right. Now, I don't even know the answer to that question, but there you go. You're in court mm-hmm. trying to get your spouse put into a facility. They need to be in there. They need the medical help. And in the meantime, where you're fighting with this person who doesn't want to let them in because of their homophobia, they're slowly deteriorating. Mm-hmm. That's something that a heterosexual couple probably wouldn't have to go through.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Right. One example I wrote about it in The Voice last week that got settled real quickly, had it happened in Kim Davis's Kentucky, it might not have. We have a common law marriage here in Texas. Mm-hmm. In order to prove common law marriage, you really have to do very little in Texas. But one thing that you can do or that you have to do in order to get other people, other bodies to accept your common law marriage is, first of all, to do a common law marriage, all you have to do in Texas is, first of all, not be married to anybody else. You have to declare your common law marriage. You have to live together. And then that's it. You're married.
Okay.
In Texas, that's it.
For how long of time?
Six months.
Just
you and I start living together, declare we're married today, tomorrow we're married, period.
Wow.
In Texas, no time requirement. So people who start calling each other husband and wife, they need to be careful about it. Anyway, so a couple who has been together 22 years, in order to formalize this, instead of getting a marriage license dated today, what they did was they filed a document, an affidavit of common law marriage with Tarrant County. The Tarrant County clerk wouldn't accept it. What she said was, no, we can only date it back to June 26th, the date of the marriage equality decision.
Oh, wow.
Well, when a law is declared unconstitutional, it's as if it didn't exist. Your marriage didn't start, Lauren, on June 26th. It started whatever date it was that you actually got married and is considered a marriage today. Here's the reason they needed this. They weren't trying to prove something. Dallas Employees Retirement Fund is perfectly happy to accept a gay couple as being married. You just have to prove that you were married on the date of your retirement, and then your spouse gets automatic retirement benefits, gets your benefits as your beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
They had to prove that they were married on that date. They can prove it by filing this affidavit. Okay. So common law marriage can be a very valuable tool for us. Now, here's how it doesn't work well. Let's say you're going to a nursing home. The nursing home doesn't want to accept that you're married. Well, here's our affidavit that has been filed with the county. It's important to have those documents. We were talking about something else that reminded me of that. I completely lost what it was. But
documentation in situations like that is...
Documentation is very important.
Regardless of the law, a same-sex couple might be expected to produce more documentation than, say, a straight couple. And in fact, sometimes in those situations where it's, you know, bringing a loved one to the hospital or certainly enrolling them in a, you know, independent living or nursing home situation... sometimes it can even just be taken on face value. This is the man who came in with this woman, and he has the right to help, and as long as we can get her signed on the line, versus
when
someone
my
else
father's
have
wife,
to,
personal yeah. example again, when my father's wife went into a nursing home, he didn't have to provide one single document, not one piece of paper. They presented themselves as Mr. and Mrs. Taffet. It was accepted that they were Mr. and Mrs. Taffet. There was no question that they were. And you know what? They never filed their marriage.
No kidding.
They had a ceremony. The whole family was there. They never filed their marriage because of pension reasons.
Oh, wow.
They got more money by not being married.
Wow. Not likely to happen for a same-sex couple
yeah.
in that situation.
No. Right. Yeah. Same-sex couple is going to be questioned.
Right.
Who is this other person? So what are some of the things that, first of all, we need to think about as a gay person getting older?
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of the things that you've studied yet? And I know you're new with this over the last few months. You're really just starting these kinds of things. But what are some of the things that you're addressing that you're thinking, maybe we need to address?
You can imagine there are a lot of the same things that we think about for the straight community. So things related to financial security, things related to what a living situation is going to be now. It's going to be different in 10 years and 20 years for someone. Those are all things that need to be addressed, and there's more complexity for the LGBT community. So these are things that we hope to uncover more through the research I mentioned that's going on at UNT, but also through the Coalition on Aging LGBT, which is one of the main things I want to talk about, is some of the work that's beginning with our group there. And we're only about 90 days in, but our first year priorities are all about identifying these things. Mm-hmm. Find out, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, it's a large metroplex. We do have a lot of support for people that are aging. We have a lot of support for people that are LGBT. We have a lot of support for people that are HIV positive. We don't have much that's directed towards that intersection.
Mm-hmm.
And those, there are, you know, very different factors that are involved for someone that's aging, and all of those are a few of those spheres.
So what are some of the things that we can do to prepare ourselves yet, or are you even at that point in the study yet?
Yeah, and it's something that Laurent asked. He's like, can you tell me, like, where's the place that I should plan to be when I look at a senior living facility? Or when I, you know, look at a relative or loved one that I'm thinking about putting in a senior living facility or helping them get into one. And the answer is we don't know yet because we don't really have one.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of many things we want to look at, because it is something that needs to be addressed early on, particularly because there aren't many places we should have an idea now of where we might want to go.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of financial security, is everything really squared away with you and your partner if you have one legally? Are there things that, you know, if you are legally married now, is that on record with all of these other organizations that hold your pension, your 401k, your health insurance, your employer, all those kinds of things, so that if something were to happen to one of you, it's as seamless transition as it is for anyone else.
Okay, so here's something that I've been thinking of or have noticed ever since the marriage equality decision, because especially here in Texas, it was something we thought wasn't coming here for years. It never occurred to us, how do you change a driver's license?
All right.
You know,
ready.
Little thing
yeah.
that you can do, and the Motor Vehicle Bureau has, or not, Texas Department of Public Safety has been perfectly fine about changing those licenses. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not a problem. Whoever thought about it?
Yeah.
I mean, we sat down at Dallas, which we were actually writing out, okay, what are some of the things that you do when you get married? Mm-hmm. How do you change your name legally? If that's something you want to do.
We didn't think we'd have to address that for a long time.
Who was ever thinking
Texas,
about that? Right. So some of these things that you're asking, Laurent, are just simple. If you're married, how do you present yourself as married? the way a straight couple does, and they seem to do it so easily. But they have a bunch of steps they have to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there's so little text about GLBT elders, I would just imagine just everyone just kind of did their own homework. Just like, you know, as a gay parent, I've had to do my homework. There's some stuff written about it, and there's a lot of resources right here in the Metroplex, but you still don't have all your answers, all your questions answered. You just got to pick up the phone and start calling. So I would imagine that would be a good way to start for individual couples who are entering into those years and need to start thinking about it. Like, call the nursing home. Mm-hmm. Hey, do you all have any gay couples there? How do you feel about it?
And you might get, oh, we don't know how we feel about it or if we have any. Yeah.
Exactly. Why don't we talk about that in a minute? Yeah. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. We didn't mention Patty is down in New Orleans. She is taking care of her father-in-law. And she'll be back with us hopefully within the next few weeks. He's getting a little bit better. She's doing a good job taking care. Aaron's down there this weekend, too, because we asked Aaron if she'd come on the show. Oh, no, I can't. I'm going down to New Orleans this weekend. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly. We're talking to Bart Poche of the University of North Texas. He studies old gay people.
This is Lewis from UT Arlington, and I listen to Lambda Weekly podcasts on LambdaWeekly.com. And
you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Bart Poche is our guest. He is a post-baccalaureate researcher with the Center for Psychosocial Research at UNT. If you'd like more information, there is a website to look for. It's www.cfa, that's, what does that stand
Coalition
for?
Coalition for
Aging. .LGBT. So www.cfa.lgbt. You don't need a .com or a .org. It's a .LGBT, which is...
It's a new top-level domain. There's no .com. It's pretty cool.
It's a .LGBT. Mm-hmm. Now, we need one of those.
This is going on at UNT.
These are two different things. CFA, the Coalition for Aging LGBT, is a...
Which you've been working with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Is the initiative for the Metroplex that is... and this is separate from the University of North Texas, separate from the work that I'm doing there. There's a lot of overlap, obviously, from how we're doing research and, you know, investigating need in the community. And so back to the question around, particularly around making those decisions about independent living in the various stages, if it's independent versus assisted, nursing home, et cetera. We don't yet have identified in DFW where these places are that are LGBT affirming and that are, you know, not just say we are welcoming, but actually competent in providing care and programming for LGBT seniors. So one of our first year initiatives with the Coalition for Aging LGBT, we're very excited about, is to create a equality scorecard, similar to what you've seen with the Corporate Equality Index.
Exactly. HRC has one. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we'll be creating one here in DFW for senior living facilities. And the goal of the scorecard is a couple phases, but the first is we probably do have a facility or two, and hopefully we'll have maybe one in each county that's doing a good job at providing programming for LGBT seniors that truly is welcoming and they're competent in how they do this. And we just don't yet know who they are. And we hope to identify first those that are doing it very well.
And I'm assuming you're going to be identifying more than just they're good, they're bad. Because there's lots of shades in between.
There is.
Lots of good people who, sure, we welcome gay people, not even thinking, what does that mean? We welcome everybody here. And they mean it.
Sure they do. But maybe can't answer the question, how do you welcome gay people into your facility? And so the first, I think, first priority of this index is for us to identify the places that really are a great place for an aging LGBT person or couple to move into now, because they do a great job. They really are welcoming. They do have other LGBT residents. This is a great place now. Maybe not the best, but a great place. And hopefully we've got a few in the Metroplex. And the next step is, you're right, there's a good and there's a bad, but there's a very big gray in between. And
which is where I would think most fall.
I would hope that most fall in that in-between, and that the issue might simply be one of they aren't sure how to become more welcoming and competent and
simply
provide
because
this
they
great
just
program.
Haven't had to deal with it.
Yeah, they haven't maybe investigated it.
Right.
And so we want to be able to help them with that. We want to connect them to training. We want to connect them to programming ideas, help them with some things just as part of their intake process. Like, how might you at least provide an LGBT person the opportunity to disclose their sexual orientation with you?
Right.
Maybe connect them to other residents that you know are also LGBT. So things that maybe when we really get down to it, they realize, you know, we say, and on our website, we say we're LGBT welcoming, but we didn't realize, like, you know, our LGBT residents are bored out of their mind here because we don't have anything that is really, you know, applicable to them.
Right. So one question can be, what activities do you provide for your LGBT residents?
Exactly.
And it might not be, well, we do this big drag show every month. It might be nothing more than, well, we have a bus that goes down to Gay Bingo and we take a group of 10 people to Gay Bingo once a month. It could be that kind of thing. It doesn't have to be something necessarily specifically done in the home.
Right, yeah,
you
exactly.
know, we take our straight residents to go shop at Walmart. We take our gay residents to go to North Park.
Exactly. there are things that you would want to see on their calendar, though, that to someone who's looking at, what am I going to do when I get here?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that, you know, you don't want this, you know, the gay people do this and the straight people do this. But you do want a way for them to at least express and preserve to some degree their gay identity and culture.
The idea of Gay Bingo, it's not, okay, this is for our gay residents to go to Gay Bingo. It's just something that you're offering. We have a busload going to Gay Bingo. Who would like to go?
Right.
Some straight residents will go. Some gay residents will go. You're not forcing the gay residents to go.
Yeah.
Of course, some might not have an interest in that. But it's something of interest provided.
Right.
So
I
would think that's the
Absolutely.
Kind of thing that you're looking
Absolutely.
For.
I know you're only 90 days into this, so you said, so you've got a lot to find out. But have you found out anything so far? I mean, even just one thing that kind of surprised you in the research?
So we have an online survey through our CFA LGBT website that I would really encourage anyone to go and take this survey. It just takes a few minutes. It's, you know, 10 questions to help us find out in, you know, the major counties in DFW what people believe are the pressing issues. The number one issue that comes up, and I'm talking like 95% of people who have taken the survey so far, it is housing. And whether that is just access to housing because of maybe economic hardship or and what we hear from just sort of additional comments, where am I actually going to live when I have to leave my home?
Mm-hmm.
It is the biggest issue so far on this survey.
Yeah.
And I think there, you know, without getting much more detail, there's a lot that is encompassed there. And then probably the second three, and these three things kind of tend to cluster together, mm-hmm. are financial independence. And that includes things like financial consulting and counseling and just regular financial preparedness, health care, medical care, and the last is legal assistance and education. And so they kind of all come together. They're not all that different than what you might hear from the straight community.
Right.
But we've already talked about some of the factors that are a little bit different that make this a little bit more challenging for aging LGBT people.
Financial independence, part of the problem with that in the past has been, especially for couples, access to a spouse's pension. If one spouse dies and the two were not getting an equal amount on Social Security, if the one getting the higher amount passes away, then the one getting the lesser amount, if you're married, is entitled to the larger amount. So there are those kinds of things that are taken care of. What are some of the other things, or haven't you identified what some of the other things are?
We have a lot more work to do, but you mean just in terms of
financially for the for LGBT as opposed to a straight couple.
Yeah, you might have, and just, you know, statistically, you do have more LGBT people that are single than their straight couples, and, mm-hmm. and you know, legal marriage, for example, and because of that. A single person's finances are a bit different than, mm-hmm. You know, a married couple that have been doing things together for a very long time.
Sure.
A person that has, for example, dependent children, adult dependent children, they might have a little bit more of a safety net with kids who have jobs and have income and mm-hmm. might be able to help them,
mm-hmm.
As well as just help with their finances. So, you know, David, we were talking about, you know, that when you were helping your father get into an independent living facility
mm-hmm.
and the things that you had to do to help with his finances and some decisions that he had to make, many people in the aging LGBT community may not have those close resources. They may have friends that can help. Maybe they have friends that are in the exact same situation, though, who are, you know, facing this need to transition and that sort of thing. So it does have an impact on someone's financial preparedness, but also just what's going to come in the following years as far as decisions I need to make about finances.
Mm-hmm. Before, we also talked about, before the show, actual living assisted or nursing home facilities specifically for LGBT people. And there's one that I know of, and that's in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Do you know much about it?
I don't know much about it, okay. But what I do know is it apparently has been successful so far, and then it's been well accepted by the LGBT community. They're definitely paving the way for what this LGBT-centered or LGBT-directed programming that we're talking about for independent living facilities should look like. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, it's mainly a place that's accessible to kind of an affluent population.
Oh, okay.
And so it's still, I mean, in terms of creating the infrastructure is a great model. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone that's on our board, Robert Emery, is very well-versed on that facility and very passionate about finding a way to bring something similar to Dallas.
And who would have thought the first one in Arizona?
Exactly.
I would have thought, I don't know, California or something.
Well, but a lot of people from California retire to Arizona.
That's true.
That's where that came from, I think.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from Arizona, especially Phoenix's gay population and gay community, but I think that's a lot of where that came from, where the impetus for it came. Let's go to, okay, you said financial independence is one of those issues. Mm. Health.
Yes.
What are some of the differences in health care for gay people as opposed to straight people?
There are, and let's maybe focus a bit more heavily on the furthest advance in age, the silent generation, those mm-hmm. that for whatever reason are not as out as each subsequent generation. And there's this lack of disclosure often with a physician about one's LGBT identity. And there are some unique needs to LGBT people when it comes to their medical care. And if a physician doesn't know, or a physician isn't, maybe they do know that you're LGBT, but they're not educated on some of the specific needs. What kinds of tests do we need to run? What kinds of different cancers might an LGBT person be more susceptible to? Or if they're simply just not comfortable and welcoming, that patient may be less likely to seek the right kind of care.
For anything. Yeah.
If you add to that, that certainly in the LGBT community, the aging population, we have a greater incidence of HIV positive people, and that brings its own level of complexity. What's additionally complex about an aging population of people living with HIV is that it's always very new information. Every time that oldest person that, you know, survived the AIDS crisis of the 80s gets a year older, they are the most recent information we have on what it's like to age with HIV, mm-hmm. what it's like to be, you know, on these meds for an extended period of time. And so we make a lot of assumptions based on the fact that these people are very alive and healthy, and that's great. But certainly a physician that doesn't even know that, you know, a patient is LGBT is maybe going to overlook some of these very important things.
So how is AIDS going to affect a whole generation, probably two generations, of people, of gay people as they age? And when I say gay, I mean gay, lesbian, and transsexual.
Yeah, we'll have to let you know.
Transgender.
Yeah. I mean, all we know is up until this point.
Right.
Our meds have been effective at you know, maintaining low viral loads and good immunity. And we know that there certainly are complications when it comes to comorbid conditions. So people that might experience any other kind of issue with the immune system is going to be a problem. But even cardiovascular, osteoporosis, diabetes, and liver disease, these things all have complications. So a very delicate balance that's been you know, carefully maintained in a person that has a compromised immune system, there's going to be some different complications because of those.
And even with lesbian healthcare, they don't know why, but we know that for whatever reason, lesbians who don't have children have a higher incidence of breast cancer. So there are some issues, you're right, that are more.
The other thing we know is that lesbians are less likely to seek regular medical care. That's something, I guess, that can be addressed in two ways. One of them, get more lesbians into medical care, but also addressing it with doctors to one of the reasons they don't go is because they've had an experience at one point or another where they felt disvalued when they went to a doctor. So that is one of those areas where I guess work needs to be done on both sides.
Exactly, yeah. There are social reasons why it's difficult sometimes for an LGBT person to go to a doctor. And then there are other reasons related to the way that our, for example, sexually we're different, that maybe even as patients we don't understand we have some unique needs. And I'm just so floored still. I have some friends and family who have recently graduated medical schools in Texas, and I won't call any of those schools out because I don't think it's, you know, these specifically, but maybe one in particular you'd expect to be a bit further along in this process. And there is no specialized training of physicians in med school about anything related to LGB care. The thing that you might learn is that gay men have HIV. And if you see, a friend of mine told me, if I see that there's a scenario on a test about a gay man, the answer is going to be HIV, or it's going to be something related to HIV.
Related to HIV.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And so they're
which that furthers the stigma.
Sure it does. Wow. So, you know, most practicing physicians today are self-educated. Those that we have, you know, in the Cedar Springs area, they're mostly self-educated, or they have practiced under someone who is self-educated. Mm-hmm. But there isn't very good training of physicians, and that's just on the medical knowledge. The next piece is, you know, related to running your business in bedside manner and all those things. How do you encourage your patients to self-disclose? And how do you not have your own sort of heteronormative assumptions about all of your patients?
I on one hand, I have to applaud our community. We do a great job of taking care of one another, you know, especially, you know, with the HIV and AIDS crisis of the 80s, whenever somebody we know is in need, especially here within the local Dallas LGBT community, we can throw on a show really quick to raise some money or, you know, whatever, razzle-dazzle. We do a pretty good job of taking care of ourselves. But our community is also kind of known as the community of youth. We don't really think too much about the...
We value youth and beauty, and we really do.
So aging. What can we do as a community to kind of take care of ourselves once we start to get older? Because we're kind of just forgotten about.
Yeah, I think...
And it's probably something you all haven't discussed, but just, you know...
We've discussed it a lot, actually.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay,
we
okay.
Have. That there, this is, there's a very real generational divide in the LGBT community. And you could find this anywhere. You could find, oh, back in my day, we were talking about, you know, climbing the hill in the snow, and these kids don't, you know what it is to struggle and all this kind of stuff. You'll find that in every sector of society, of course.
Sure.
But in the LGBT community, specifically that issue you brought up, we value, you know, physical beauty and youthfulness and physical fitness and, you know, agility and all that kind of stuff. It's a different, it does create this different, even deeper divide between the youngest and the oldest in the generation. And so, yes, there are things that the older generation does need to think about sort of on their own, maybe without the support and connection to a younger generation. But addressing this divide is a very important issue for us. And it's about more than just caring for our current LGBT elders. It's about the future of the community, honestly.
Yeah.
And so these people, and, you know, and let's talk about the silent generation again. These folks that were born in the late 20s, 30s, and 40s, you know, they were born into a time of McCarthyism and the Red Scare and the Lavender Scare. And it was a time when you didn't talk about or criticize the government, and you didn't advocate for a point of view contrary to a political policy. And you were kind of just, you didn't certainly come out very actively. But through the years of this, all this activism, and I love that we're, you know, 2 days since the Stonewall movie came out, which I haven't seen yet. But, you know, these are the people that really fought for those rights that we now have and sometimes take for granted. I take them for granted for sure. Mm-hmm. And this is something that the youngest generation hasn't yet had to encounter. We're good at occupying things, and we're good at, you know, social media blasts and all that kind of stuff, which is important. And it's kind of the way that the younger generation does it. But really effective community change advocacy and organizing that has gotten us to where we are right now. Mm-hmm. Those who are fighting in the Supreme Court cases, they're not 20-somethings.
No.
And so this sort of passing along of what it's taken to get us here, remembering what it used to be, because history can repeat itself if we don't stay vigilant and if we don't address things the right way. So it is about taking care of our elders. And so the, you know, the public policy that's to come, where we focus things like community funding and charitable work and all that kind of stuff, those are decisions younger generations will be making. And so that connection is important, but it goes the other way too. Mm-hmm. Being able to not just understand and remember the history, but how they actually did it is pretty amazing. Some of the, they didn't just protest and picket. Like, they were very smart about how they organized, who they talked to, where they were, mm-hmm. the graphic images sometimes that they would create. They weren't just camping out in a park, you know, in right. the sit-in, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So we do talk a lot about that okay. divide, yeah.
Do you know what else? We've been talking about mostly gay. And we're doing that specifically. Patty's not here. We don't have... No. Of course, we're addressing lesbian. But we haven't mentioned trans.
Yes.
And trans in a nursing home. Trans healthcare. We need to take a break. So right after
October
the break, that's what I want to talk
breast
about.
Cancer Awareness Month.
Even a nursing home that accepts and says, oh, sure, a gay and lesbian person, what do you mean you're trans?
Right.
And I'm sure that there's a lot of that out there, especially right now. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. The late Patty Fink is running a little bit late. She'll be with us in 3 or 4 weeks. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
Lambda Weekly, I'm Dave Taffet here with Laurent Landis. Patty is down in New Orleans taking care of her father-in-law, actually, so she'll be back with us as soon as he's on the mend. We're talking to Bart Poche. He's from UNT. He also works with the Coalition for the Aging LGBT. You can get more information about them at www.cfa.lgbt. The Coalition for the Aging has two major projects. One of them is this Health Equality Index.
Yeah.
The other one is...
We're working on establishing a hotline, basically mm-hmm. a social services hotline specifically directed towards aging LGBT people. We do have, there are organizations that run hotlines, so you have a 211, for example. You have Senior Source that has one for the aging community. There isn't one that is specifically focused on some of the unique needs of the aging LGBT community. And when I say hotline, it can mean a lot of things. In its first iteration, it's probably going to be a resource and referral line to existing organizations that are available. Ultimately, we would love to have it become something that is more of a case management and advocacy group. And really, our first hires that we do as a coalition are going to be probably for caseworkers, social workers to help with this area. And so we're looking at a couple different ways to start this thing. And honestly, it's not even off the ground yet. And we've already had people reaching out to us
There is.
There is. And of course, the only issue we've been contacted about, as I mentioned earlier, is housing. Yeah. And so we're exploring a couple options. We may create our own hotline that we, staff ourselves and or perhaps with these social workers. We may work with an existing organization like 211 or maybe with Senior Source to help sort of with some training on how to interact with an LGBT caller differently, some of the situations they may face that a straight person may not face, and how to distinguish which of those services you're referring to are appropriate for an LGBT person, or perhaps may not even be safe for an LGBT person to explore, where they may not be welcomed or those kinds of things. So it's one we're really excited about. And again, it's still very much in the formation phases, but I love either idea. If it were to be its own standalone hotline, where we have very direct control and the ability to provide these specific resources, but I also really like the idea of helping an organization that's already trying to do the right thing and trying to help the aging community become a bit more focused on LGBT.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about trans.
Sure.
I don't know if you've jumped right into that topic in some of your studies yet. But I could see a facility, sure, I'm okay with gay and lesbian, and then as soon as you mention trans, the eyes glaze over because they don't even know what you're talking
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
How safe is a trans person in a nursing facility or even an assisted living facility, because there are different levels of care, or even just a senior facility or a senior center, just visiting a day facility. Mm-hmm. How safe would a trans person be?
I love that that's your first question, because that really is the first thing to address is physical safety.
Yeah.
Something that most people that are looking at an independent living place don't have to really think about.
Right. Or assume that they're going to be safe.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Even if there are statements from the leadership of the, you know, independent facility, the senior living facility, or the marketing department that mm-hmm. says, we welcome trans people, how am I actually going to be treated when I'm off on the patio with other residents there? And, of course, you have the same issue of, you know, common bathroom facilities and those kinds of things. What's that going to be like? And so it is a very different situation, of course, for a lot of trans people. What you unfortunately see happen in both the case of trans and LGBT people is as they move into this stage of life where they do have to enter a facility, many of them will go back in the closet and many will reverse their transition so that they do appear.
Really?
For example, if it's difficult for them to maybe pass, let's say, without coming out, many will go reverse the transition and present as male or female, just so they don't have to deal with that stigma or discrimination or perhaps personal safety issues. It's just easier to go back in the closet. And the same might be true for an LGBT person.
Is there any study on how safe that is for them to do mentally or just for themselves as a person? It seems to me that doing that is a very... To me, that would be worse than coming out.
Right, yeah.
And by worse, not worse to everybody else. Worse,
just sort of psychologically,
how hard it is.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, because
coming out
is liberating.
Right.
Going in is...
And what's just happened to your social structure, to
yeah.
your identity as an LGBT or transgender person. And then the stigma and the shame and the internalized homophobia or transphobia that mm-hmm. comes along with having to once again deny who you are simply because of factors in the world around mm-hmm. you. Yes, I haven't read specific studies about people that are going through that, but there is lots of research around people for whatever reason who are uncomfortable being themselves.
Now, you're actually doing
person.
Specifically trans research at UNT.
We're including trans people in this study that we're doing on LGBT
and you need
for
more
sure. We do,
people
yes.
to, if somebody needs to get into or wants to get in touch with you and be part of this study, what do
yes.
they do?
And we actually need specifically people that men and women that identify as transgender and men and women that identify as bisexual of any gender. We need basically 200 participants for this study that UNT is doing. It's the aging LGBT study. And anyone can get in touch with us if you're interested. You can just email us at projectgraypride@gmail.com. And we'll get back to you with scheduling information. It takes about 2 hours to complete the survey. It's done on a computer, but it has to be a computer that we bring with us to the person. We're very flexible mm-hmm. about times and places where we'll meet. We pay $25 as an incentive, which isn't a whole lot of money, but just to thank you for participating.
Hey, that's a decent meal.
You know, it's
yeah.
it's low-wage clerical work for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So anyone interested, please do email us at projectgraypride@gmail.com. We would love to talk to you.
Good.
Thank you. It's for people that are age 50 and older, are just sort of the block that we are investigating.
That you're
at this
working
point.
With
so
right now.
50 or older, identify as bisexual and or transgender. We'd sure love to have you participate with us.
We don't fit, Josh. We're too young.
Right.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Nor are we bi. At least I'm not.
Anyway, let's talk about a little bit about the different generations. You were talking about the silent generation. Yes, my voice is going. It must be this new studio. My voice is fine, and it's just funny things this mic is doing to me. You were talking about the silent generation that is likely to hide who they were. They're not used to arguing and fighting the government. Now, my generation, I grew up during the Vietnam era. I'm not known for keeping my mouth shut about anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just wouldn't know how to do it. And getting around my age, the idea of hiding who I was, going into the closet is absolutely inconceivable. It's a non-negotiable. And I've heard other people my age saying this. Non-negotiable, not something that we're going to do. You get to somebody like Josh, and it's like, what's a closet? He doesn't even understand the concept. So, and I was at Teen Pride last week where there were these idiotic demonstrators. The kids who were there, 200 of them, I promise you, most of them didn't even understand the concept of what they were protesting. They were laughing at the protesters because they thought it was kind of funny that they were there. But their attitude was, I'm 16 years old. They're protesting something I'm doing. Mm-hmm. What could possibly... So there was not even the slightest conception of anything that they were doing that should be... They could change, no less be protested. That right. Just no... The idea wasn't even there.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But you take somebody like me, I'm going to get myself in trouble because... I'm simply not going to adapt. I'll get myself thrown out of a nursing home.
I probably would too, because as I've noticed with like relatives, the older you get, the worse your personality, whatever personality you have.
Oh no!
it starts to like get bigger. If you were already a grouchy person, loudmouth, you're probably going to be 10 times that when you get older. You just don't care.
I mean, that's not my problem. My problem is just my big mouth.
Exactly.
Well, a great next transition would be David's big mouth. No, it would be
exactly.
The baby boomer generation. Obviously, you know, a huge generation at mm-hmm. this point. But yeah, the baby boomer generation, they're the Stonewall folks. They're the sexual revolution. They're the Vietnam War protesters. Yeah. The first ones, well, not the first. We've had some radical government opposition in the past, but to really kind of break that trend. And so it was, however, still a time of very rampant and often institutionalized sexism, and that's something that's very closely related to homophobia and heteronormativity is sexism in a culture. And so while there was this great advance sort of in the idea of advocacy and disrupting the government and all that kind of stuff that your generation sort of started, and it made tons of progress for the gay community. It wasn't in itself just a breakthrough for the LGBT community in the 60s and 70s. And the fact that it is such a big generation, this is there's some recent data out from the Williams Institute that's based on the 2010 census that actually for the first time gives some insight into the number of LGBT seniors living in the Metroplex. So we can see by county now, and mm-hmm. everyone knows this is kind of a difficult number to estimate, but it's based on a lot of things. We have the Gallup Daily Poll, we have the National Health Survey, we have other ways to estimate, and the Williams Institute builds these things in with the census. But we're looking at right now in 2015, probably about 1.5 million people in Dallas County, age 45 to 85, that identify as LGBT. Sorry, not Dallas County. Dallas, Tarrant, and Collin combined. 1.5 million people, which is a lot bigger than I thought, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Well, just even, I was looking at those same numbers, and in Collin County alone, I was surprised.
Yeah, 350,000 just in Collin County. Exactly, it is a lot. When you look down the road, say maybe 10 years, you're looking at close to double that number for Dallas-Fort Worth. So it is, when you ask the very first question, which is why do we want to look at this? Well, first of all, there's a lot that we don't know. There's not much research that's been done. Mm-hmm. And this is going to become with what's called the silver tsunami, this huge effect of people that are entering retirement age. It's going to become a very big social, political, economic issue for us. That we're just not yet prepared for in the LGBT community.
And people are just, in general, are just living longer.
Exactly, yeah.
Healthier. Advanced medicine, mm-hmm. healthier lifestyles, which is all a good thing. Mm-hmm. But that means there's going to be more silvers.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so when you get to my generation, I'm a generation behind Jack and George, who've been on our show before. They've been together 55 years. They live together in their own home. If something happens to one of them, I worry that one of them might have to go to a nursing home.
Yes.
And, other people can hide. Somebody in a nursing home might say, oh, that was that couple that was on the cover of People magazine. Mm. You are on the front page of the New York Times. They've gotten a lot of publicity as the first gay married couple in Dallas County. If something like that happens over the next few, what do we do? How do we protect them?
Yeah, and Jack and George might represent this two very different, stark ideas mm-hmm. of an aging LGBT person, where here you have Jack and George, who are the perfect couple, and they have been together for 50 years, and you know things are going well for them, and we're very happy for them, versus you have at the very opposite, and someone who is living in poverty, who's at risk of homelessness, who doesn't have access to quality health care, who doesn't have a social support or family around them. There is a lot in between, and the truth is, and gosh, I don't want to scare Jack and George, but things change quite a bit when Jack or George do become single later in life. And that picture changes the needs of a person who has just lost their partner change quite a bit. Mm-hmm. There's obviously an effect to emotional and mental health when that happens. And sometimes there's not that safety net that needs to be there. There's not even just the list of resources yet for, you know, organizations that are able to help them.
And when you talk about this, the safety net, you're talking about in a traditional family. You have the married couple, usually their kids, and there's an extended family.
Exactly.
What about our extended families? We have large families that are, I mean, I have families of cousins who are related to me who we're planning on taking care of each other. But they're not local, and I have friends here locally. I plan to become a very big burden to Laurent, for example. But in order for him to actually take care of me, there are all kinds of legal obstacles for him doing that.
And it is a wonderful phenomenon in the LGBT community, these chosen families that we have built. So for many people that didn't have the acceptance of their parents or their children or their siblings, they've been able to assemble this group of people around them who they've chosen to become their own family. It's an incredible support structure. One common problem is that they're often unigenerational. They're the same generation as we are. And so what happens when we all age at the same time and we start to encounter the same needs and need the same support as we age, that's much more difficult when your primary support structure is going through the exact same thing.
Right.
And of course, this isn't the case for everyone, mm-hmm. but for those that do have that distance from family and descendants and that kind of a thing. And the same can be said of, you know, cousins. We're all going to, you know, kind of age together. And so it's, again, that back to that concept of the generational divide, mm-hmm. That it really does just create a unique situation for LGBT
people. Another thing in the gay community, people like Laurent, he's been a co-host of mine since 1999, okay. So I've seen him age. He hasn't seen me age.
Right. Yeah, no one has.
So we have that phenomenon as well, where some of us just have decided not to age. Is that part of your study?
I don't know what you're talking about. Yes, it is, actually. What does happen when there's this concept of felt age mm-hmm. that can be measured, and you kind of alluded to it just now, David. But what we find, and partly because of the fact that people are living longer and healthier, like Laurent was talking about, is felt age is much lower now than it might have been 20 years mm-hmm. ago for someone that's 60, 70, 80 years old. And so, yes, it is a real phenomenon, and it has a an impact on physical health, on mental health, and quality of life for someone who doesn't feel like what the traditional expectation is for someone who's 70 years mm-hmm. old.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not that person that acts like I'm supposed to be acting in my age. Okay, good. That's good to know that I'm not.
Or for anyone's age,
baby,
really.
Go adopt the kid.
Right. That'll age me real quickly because coming from the old man over there. Are there any other differences that you see in family structure or things that we can do because of the differences in our family structure that will help us as we age?
And so certainly organizations that look to promote community events and promote activities and ways to get people involved in the LGBT community that may not otherwise be. And the truth is that the older you go in years, you do find that there is less connection to, for example, the LGBT community in Dallas or in Fort Worth. And we talked a little bit about, you know, the values of, you know, younger people in the community and that sort of thing, or in the gay community, LGBT community. And so ways to help make that a more accessible, more attractive, and more, I guess, appropriate for an aging population. That's important for all of us to think about. And it's the same can be true for some direct services for LGBT people. Community centers, whether they're gay or not, that really do want to provide some programming for LGBT people. They're out there, too. This isn't just gay or not. There are others, like when we're talking about senior living facilities, that just don't know yet that they're not doing a great job of helping provide connection for LGBT people. They don't have the resources yet.
We need to wrap up.
Really quick, well, I want you to give back your website.
Yeah, it's cfa.lgbt. You can get more information on the Coalition for Aging LGBT. You can read about the amazing group of people that are running it. I'm kind of the who's that of the who's who of advocacy right now, the people that are on this board. Awesome. And you can also take our survey, and please do that at cfa.lgbt.
Bart, I want to thank you for coming to be with us today. We need to give the next show an extra minute or two to get in here because it's our brand new studio and we have no idea what we're doing.
Thanks so much, Bart.
Which is so completely different for us here at KNON. Thank you, Bart, for filling
Thank
in
so
and being. And come back when after you know more of your research is done, and you can talk about some of your findings. Next week, our guest is Janice Ian, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly then.